This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Dan Blank. He's the founder of We Grow Media and works with primarily authors, but I think also with publishers and media companies on content and what I would say is sort of general marketing and how to be successful in the new world. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. You know, I've admired your thinking, and I get your newsletter. I read it pretty voraciously because I think you have a lot of really good ideas, and your approach, I think, is, you know, I mean, there are some people who work with authors who are very, I guess I would say, rigid in their thinking, and I think I see you as being much more generous of spirit when you're thinking about how writers operate. But maybe you could talk a little bit about your, I guess I'm curious to know how you got to being a guru of marketing for writers, and you know, how you developed into the person that you are today.
Okay, I mean, for me, I'm very passionate about working with publishers and writers, and the idea about this idea of marketing around it, for me, it's very much about, you know, what type of impact does a writer want to have, and how do they want to develop their legacy? So where I feel some writers get off track is where they sort of forget that, where they get so focused on one of the milestones, such as I want to publish a book, which is an incredible, wonderful milestone to reach. But it's this idea of what are you building over time? How are you ensuring that you're going to actually develop an audience and really have a legacy that is sort of more than the sum of its parts? So my background is I've worked with really more than 500 authors. I do a lot of training and teaching. So I do a lot of online training. I do that through my own site at wegrowmedia.com. I have partnerships with Writer's Digest and with Media Bistro. And I'm really fortunate enough to speak at a lot of really wonderful publishing and writing conferences. So I'll teach some workshops there, and I'll do different sessions. In the past, I've worked for, I have a range of clients at WeGrow Media, individual authors and publishers and media companies. I spent a decade at Reed Business Information, which is really a company that had a lot of magazine and media brands, so brands like Publishers Weekly and Library Journal. So there I worked with a lot of journalists and writers. I worked across about 40 brands. So I'd help set up their blog strategy of more than 300 bloggers. I helped establish their social media strategy for many of those 40 brands, you know, years ago when social media was really still coming into the fore. And I've worked with a lot of writers really figuring out what does it mean to build an audience online, really having a content strategy around that. And for me, it's this idea that what you create, the content that you create, whatever it is now inherently matched up with this idea of actually developing an audience, that it's harder and harder for a writer to just focus on writing and someone else will quote-unquote market it. I think that the closer you are as a creator an audience you hope to reach, I think that's a very powerful connection. Not because I think that writers should be publicists, but again, going back to the idea of really having an impact in the world and really building a legacy, that when you look at how your work shapes someone's life or the impact, the closer you are to that, the more you're able to understand what that is and hopefully maximize that over time.
So let me ask you, because I think that the way you put it is really, it makes sense to me. I understand it. I also, though, you know, because I talk to writers a lot about marketing and the sort of the notion that many writers have is that it's not something they feel comfortable with. You know, that they sometimes, whether it's true or not, I think it's a feeling that a lot of writers have that it's, they want to write, they don't necessarily want to talk about the writing, or they don't necessarily want to be in, you know, talking to people who are online about their work. So what do you do when people express that? Because I'm sure you have heard it more often than anybody else.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing that I'm very adamant about is this is a choice. You alone are able to determine the type of writing career that you want to have, but what your writing means to you, And I've been an artist, I've been a writer, I've been a musician, I've had a lot of very wonderful creative friends. My wife is an artist. I understand the value of creation for creation's sake. What I like pointing out is that you have to make a choice. The idea of just saying, I'm going to create high quality work, and the world will find it, and the world will reward me for it. You are really betting your career, betting your legacy on a crapshoot. And I think this is sort of very much a golden age of writing, because you now have an ability to get your work in front of other people. I turn 39 in March. So I remember that time of being an artist, of being a writer, and feeling very limited to having access to build an audience, that you had very few paths, and they were often through proving your value to other people to get to an audience. So I think it's a real opportunity, and when people say, you know what, I do want that. I do want to build an audience. It's very important to me. I think that it is a challenge to think about the idea of engaging with people, of even the very idea of branding and marketing. To me, I try to whittle it down to the idea that marketing or branding, whatever term you want to use, it's really about this idea of building, of communicating, of how to effectively communicate the value of your work, and then about how to build trust, and not trust as a commodity to be leveraged, but really aligning with people who are those you're really hoping to reach. So for a lot of people I work with, we really start off talking about goals. And it's always interesting to find how, you know, some writers haven't done the homework they need to do. They take a really broad brushstroke about what their goals are. So they'll say, well, my goal is to have a published book, which I think is really vague because you don't really think critically about the effect of your work. You're just thinking about this one milestone. And if you ask them about their audience, again, they can get very vague. You know, someone who loves a good story or anyone who likes sports. Again, they haven't done the work to really think about who they're trying to reach and why that person would engage with them. So to me, I tend to view the idea of marketing, the idea of branding, as becoming more informed about the power of your work, about how it could connect with the world. And that's usually when I'm working with writers, how I tend to phrase it, how I tend to work with them, is to really explore this. So I'm working with a group of writers right now for a class that I have called Build Your Author Platform. It's an online class. And you see this challenge come up again and again where they say, you know, I just want to tell a good story. I want people to feel a bit of escape. And that's often not good enough to really understand who your audience is and how to reach them. So we start digging into the themes of their book, about what motivates someone to buy this type of book. And I'll use a very easy example, something like Harry Potter, where all these people didn't buy Harry Potter because they love wizard books. I will probably never read another wizard book the rest of my life, but I loved Harry Potter. That's because when you get to the themes about identity, the themes about family versus power, all the themes that are inherent in that book are very powerful. And when you understand that, you help understand, well, this is why someone would pick up my book. This is how I should talk about it if I engage in social media or meet people in person. So to me, the idea of marketing is very much about understanding your work a bit better and about understanding your audience a bit better.
No, I think that's really perceptive, because I think you need to be able to explain to writers or anybody who's trying to figure out how to reach an audience, how to dig into what they're doing and how to figure out how they connect. You know, if you think about, and I think what you're experiencing as you work with writers is, and probably with publishers too, that for, as you described it, for the better part of our, you know, for as long as we can remember, authors and publishers have been disconnected from readers. They don't have the opportunity in the way that online allows to interact on a regular basis. I mean, you know, if a writer would in the past go out on tour, you could meet people, you know, when you're giving a talk or you're doing a reading, and that's, you know, it's pretty rewarding for writers to have the opportunity to interact with their fans and hear what they say, and you know, or talk about the content of their books and learn what people are thinking about them and how they're using them. But that's a fairly limited experience and not something you can practice every day. And by the same token, I would say for publishers, the ability to relate to readers is almost non-existent because the publishers have never had to do that. They've always gone through retailers and other intermediaries. So, I guess I'm curious. I know on your website you say helping writers and publishers make an impact and build their legacies, which I think is a great line. How often do you work with publishers on the kinds of things you're talking about with authors?
Well, that depends on the client. So I always have clients who are publishers and media companies, and I always have courses running and one-on-one work with writers. So with the larger clients, oftentimes it depends on their specific needs. So it's about scaling a lot of this across their audience. I can't walk into a publisher and sort of force them to do anything. So there has to be, it's the same with publishers as with writers. There has to be a certain willingness of meeting you halfway, of having the motivation to do that. At publishers, I think it's a lot more complicated because of the scale of their operation. I don't think it's at all the thing that publishers don't get it, you know. I think the challenge there is scaling the effort of what they're doing. When you meet people working in publishing companies, they're incredibly smart. They're incredibly passionate. What they often need is the resources to scale that passion and that expertise, and to change quickly because everything is changing very quickly right now. I think it's interesting you mentioned you had book tours and people showing up to these events and how powerful that is. You know, when I was in college, I managed a bookstore cafe, and we had a lot of, I was in charge of booking a lot of events. We had a lot of poetry readings and a lot of musicians and all kinds of wonderful cultural events go through there. And you would see again and again the events that would just be, you know, people, you know, standing room only, outflowing into the street, and events where it's just, you know, the writer on stage and his girlfriend in the audience. And why I'm so passionate about this is because that's a shame, is because you want for that author, that writer, that, you know, what have you, to have that audience there with them, to really connect with them. And I think that nowadays you have those tools to do it.
No, I think that's right. So when authors talk to you or publishers or anybody, and they say, what specific aside from the theoretical, kind of philosophical things that they need to understand, do you give them specific advice on? I mean, I'm sure I think you do. You have a course in blogging, so writers typically want to know, what's an effective way of blogging. Not that we'll just express myself, but we'll get people to pay attention to what I'm saying. How do I work? How do I be on Facebook? How do I use? How do I exist in this social world in a way that will help me reach people who I would like to read my book? What kinds of things? I mean, I obviously don't want to give away things that are trade secrets that people are paying you for, but maybe you could talk a little bit in general about, your thinking about that.
Absolutely. I mean, two things that come to mind right away are this idea that oftentimes people overlook the basics. What they want is, you know, what's the button I can put on my blog to make it quote unquote social? And oftentimes you really look at the answer is, it's the basics. It's building relationships. It is being very adamant about opening yourself up, about connecting with people offline. So I've heard this quote from other people, and I'm a big believer in it, is that I think it was Tim Ferriss who said this, that the least crowded channel is in person, or the phone, or email. I'm always shocked at people's unwillingness to not just tweet something out or to comment, but actually send an email to someone, to pick up the phone, to set up a meeting with them. So if I look at authors who are doing a lot of stuff to really develop their platforms, build an audience, you see them again and again building relationships and partnerships and alignments with other people. And these are very, I don't want to call them basic skill sets, but they're deeply human skill sets that, yes, we have digital technology to aid in that process. I think it's powerful. But this is not about becoming some kind of expert in some crazy new tool. I think that that's usually a stone that many people leave untouched. I think that people are inherently a little shy sometimes, or it's very complicated to deal with other people. That is a very powerful driver. The second thing I deal a lot with is the idea of analytics and measurement. So they did really outlining what your goals are and what the milestones are to get there. And then I do a lot of work with analytics of how do we measure the effect that we want to have? What action do we want people to take? So at a very basic level, if you're an author trying to develop an audience of maybe having a website or having a blog, about developing a newsletter list, because you want to actually reach these people yourself. So if you have 300 people's names on your newsletter list, and you're developing your book, these are people you can access directly. They're people you're able to build a deeper relationship with. So just the idea of structuring that, of what that looks like, of how do we measure what's working, what isn't. Because right now, I think with writers, they have their writing to do, and that alone is already a big challenge. Most of them probably have a day job or some kind of other obligation. They have a family or friends or a spouse or significant other. They have to mow the lawn and do laundry. There's an infinite amount of things they can be doing when you talk about social media or marketing and developing an audience. So I'm a big believer in really measuring what works, because the idea here is not to do more work. The idea is to do more of what works and less of what doesn't work. So right off the bat, I'd say relationships and measurement are two really, really powerful things people should be doing.
When you talk about measurement, and I think I agree with you, I think that, and I like the way you put it, I think that's really important to use measuring tools as a way of actually doing more efficient work and being better at using the time that you have available. So the principle is great, but do you have particular tools that you recommend to people in terms of analytics? I think a lot of people, you know, you might get Google Analytics on your website and you kind of look every day, I posted a new blog and how many more visitors came, but, you know, that really doesn't give you a whole lot of information about the engagement level that you're having. And, you know, I think in terms of social media also, people just, they look at kind of gross measurements, like how many followers do I have on Twitter, or how many times have I been mentioned in the, in other people's Twitter feeds. Those are valuable, I think, but it seems to me they're kind of grosser measures, and I'm assuming you have something finer in mind.
Definitely. I don't want to scare people off the idea of analytics. There are ways to do this at a much more basic, non-techie level and then deeper levels. Analytics should be about action that you can take. So you're right in saying that too many people look at analytics to simply see what happened already. And the way to use analytics is to be looking there, is to dig into them and walk away with a specific action that you can take. That when you're looking at Google Analytics, maybe you're setting up a funnel in Google Analytics or a segmentation in their software. The idea is you're going in there, you're seeing what's working, what isn't, and walking away with something you can do to optimize that. It's the same thing with any kind of social media analytics. So if you're an author and you blog as part of kind of your platform and connect with your audience, you can be leveraging these tools in a relatively basic way to be testing out ideas to see these are the topics that engage people. This is the data I'm collecting to prove that out one way or another. And you should walk away with that not saying, I'm awesome, I got 3,000 page views on this, but saying, this worked, this didn't work. So I'm going to take what worked, and I'm going to really expand that a bit. And then I'm going to put it out in three more blog posts. I'm going to do a guest series, or I'm going to do a webcast, or I'm going to do a special newsletter, or I'm going to write an ebook, or I'm going to do a session at this upcoming writing event on it. And keep measuring to see what works, what actually gets people's attention, what delivers more engagement. And oftentimes in that is not just action that you can take, but the idea of action that others can take. So it's not enough to have 1,000 Twitter followers. What you want is the number of people who actually retweet what you're saying, or comment on your blog, or sign up for a newsletter, or somehow take an action. I think that's something that people overlook, is that they feel that if they have an audience that the law of averages will kind of work itself out. People buy your book. It's very hard to get people to take an action. And we've all been to blogs that seem like they're good blogs and no one seems to interact with it. Look at the blogs where you go and every post has dozens of comments on it, and you're like, what is going on here?
Right,
And
no,
it's
I'm interested. Right, that's exactly right. So, if what is the difference? How does that work? If you're, when you see a blog where everybody is active all the time, what's the difference between that and somebody who's writing really well, but no one's interacting with them?
yeah, I mean, oftentimes you see people who are really, in a sense, too basic, but really listening. They're very careful about being observant about what works in other blogs, about topics that really work. They're very careful about partnerships, about how to get their stuff to spread. So in a way, I've seen a lot of people who blog, and it's just all they can bring themselves to do to write the blog post. And what that means is that they're not getting it in front of people's eyes. They're not making interesting partnerships to ensure that other people see it. They're not looking at the data because they're saying, you know what? I know this is a hot topic, and I know my blog post was great, and I've got to go do my laundry, so that's all I'm going to do with it. And what that means is that will separate that blogger from the blogger who really succeeds. Is that, again, it's not that it's endless work, it's that they're being a little more strategic about it. They're being a little more active and a little more involved with them, really kind of shepherding it through. It's not enough to just hit publish anymore. That's sort of almost half your work is done at that point. The other half is kind of getting it out there, getting conversations started, keeping conversations going. So with those blogs you see, they're very active. You often see the author in the trenches there commenting and other blogs commenting and getting other people involved. It's much more of a social game.
Right. No, I think, and maybe I wonder, I felt myself wondering whether it was kind of inherent in certain people's personalities. Like you're a very social guy. You're comfortable talking. You're comfortable speaking in front of crowds. You have a really good approach to people, and people respond. But somebody else who could say the same things you do, equally compellingly, will get no response at all because they're just not able to engage. And maybe it's personality. It seems like that maybe, so that people, it's not that you can't learn this, but that, even if you're not very good at being social in the world, but it does seem that the people who are best also have the sort of social personalities that spill over into this kind of work.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I mean, because I believe it's learned, and I believe that the learning comes more from the motivation to learn. So I do quite a bit of public speaking nowadays, and I am shocked at how comfortable I am beforehand. That there's no nervousness whatsoever. There's nothing, and I'm prepared. And then there's it used to be where like you'd be like sweating bullets for the half hour beforehand, like you're running to the bathroom because you just feel, And that's gone. And there's no one in the world more shocked about it than I am. And it's not because I'm inherently a public speaker, because I clearly, clearly remember the many times where you were just like having a panic attack beforehand. And it was just that thing of the Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours, whatever you want to call it, where you do it enough and you start understanding it more. You start understanding that the parameters. A lot of us aren't social in that way because we're very afraid. We don't understand the parameters. We're afraid of the quote unquote what could happen. And when you go through the experience again and again, you start understanding the worst that could happen. You also start understanding that the percentage of that thing actually happening. You start understanding how the dynamic works. That inherently somehow makes you more comfortable with it. I would say that Facebook has done a lot for publishing, because even a couple of years ago, before Facebook went into the with proper adults, not just college kids, people had a real hard time sharing anything online. There was such a fear about sharing anything. And nowadays, people are sharing so much stuff on Twitter, and I think especially Facebook. And the difference you see in our culture, where colleagues of mine wouldn't have done that 3 or 4 years ago. Certainly my brother or my parents or my personal friends wouldn't have done that. And now everyone does it. They say things publicly that will be archived by a company that you don't know what they'll do with it. You'll take photos of your kids and put it out there on the web without even thinking about it. This is such a huge cultural shift, and it was because people got used to doing that. It became safe, but we watched it. More people did it. More people you trusted did it. You just kept doing it, and finally, you became comfortable with it. So all that to say is I do think it's learned, and I will say that for someone like myself or people who have done much more than I have, it looks as though they're just built that way. And I think that oftentimes it's not. Oftentimes it was just them. You didn't notice them when they were the guy puking before he went on stage. You noticed him 5 years later when he's done 100 more sessions like that and kind of worked out the psychological issues around it and became comfortable.
Well, I guess, I mean, I guess I have to, you know, I have to accept that, because my bias has always been to feel that, you know, it's the people who are really good at this are just naturals. But I suppose you're probably right that there are, you know, you can, this is learned behavior. And I like the idea that if, and again, I think that's probably a good way to describe it for two writers who are worried about this, that in fact, you know, this is, if the more you do it, the better you get at this.
Yeah, I mean, you know. I'm even thinking of, you know, I've been teaching the Build Your Author Platform class for a year now, and I've been talking a lot to the first set of students who went through the course. And one of them I have in my mind, she didn't have a blog, and then she started blogging. That was a huge hurdle for her. She's not 20 and all this stuff. She started a blog, very nervous about it. And it really started to have a community around it. Somewhere in there, we challenged her to do video, and she never in her life wanted to do video, see herself on video, hear herself, and she did it, and she sort of kept getting over these hurdles in her own way, in her own time. You know, there was no overt peer pressure, but we just talked about the value of it, and she bought into it. And you see in a simple year, 1 year, how much someone has changed in terms of what their boundaries are. What you also see most notably is not that they've pushed themselves to jump off a cliff, but that they've done it in their own way, and that the audience they're building, the community that they're now engaged with, is really genuine to them. That it's not a bunch of strangers, that they're really making relationships. They have these frequent commenters, and their profile has grown. And you sort of see that happen. And I think in 12 months, it's really amazing to see the change that you can make in a period of time like that. And I see that all the time, so... Sorry.
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm glad you mentioned video, because it was something I wanted to ask you about. You know, I think video is incredibly powerful just seeing how video is used online, and it's fairly obvious how many hours of it are being watched at any given moment at this point. In terms of authors using video, when you mentioned that for the author that you were just talking about, you're talking about having a YouTube channel, or are you talking about doing video on their own website? I mean, what do you think of video, and how do you think authors and publishers can use it to really be effective?
I mean, what she was doing was putting on YouTube but then embedding it on her blog, because that's where her audience was.
Right.
Video is so powerful, and I always think of it in terms of, I'll use Johnny Carson because I grew up with him, but think of how personal that connection is that you end your day every night in bed with Johnny Carson on your screen. There was such a personal connection there of that's how you ended your day, of allowing this person into your life like that. And I think that it's because you see them, you hear their voice, there's some very personal connection that happens there. I'm a huge fan of YouTube, and I think that people still overlook the fact that YouTube is truly a social network. That when you get into some of these areas, you see people who have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of subscribers. That these are normal people who started video blogging, and they're normal people, and they have thousands upon thousands of subscribers. And for some, it's very much a business, and other people, it's more of a hobby. But what it is that you realize, and I've seen this for myself, where you become attuned to someone's personality. You like having them in your life. I've seen this on Twitter as well, where it's very hard to unsubscribe to people, because what it means is that you're banishing their voice from your life. That's very hard to do. So if you think about how do you differentiate yourself as an author, if you can get your ideas into someone's head, that's very powerful. You get your physical voice as you do into someone's head. That's powerful, because it's another human contact that they're making, and they get used to that voice and that tone and how you talk and your worldview. If they then get your face into that, and I'm not talking about this, you know, awesome, beautiful face, just sort of who you are as a real person, it's another touch point. It's another way that you're engaging them on this deeply human level. And I think it could be a huge differentiator. So I use in some of my presentations Jackson Pierce, who's a YA author, as an example. And she's very big on video. And she does She has a YouTube channel where she does, you know, pretty much a weekly video on a certain topic, her talking at the camera. She does a lot of live chats from her home, where Wednesday night she'll just turn on the live stream and it's her at her computer and just talk to her audience. And you see how powerful that connection becomes. Because it's not just her books, it's not just her ideas or her writing style and then her voice, but you need to start in Jackson in your life. You look forward to it just as much as you look forward to any television show that you watch. You build a relationship with that character. But in this case, the character is a real person, and I think that's almost more powerful because they're fallible, they're real. You can actually comment on it, and they comment back, and you're like, oh, my God. And you see this a lot where I've seen this on Twitter where people say, you know, they follow Neil Gaiman, who's very active on Twitter, and it blows their mind that Neil will respond to them. This is their idol. And I'm not saying that any of us are going to be Neil Gaiman, but you see how powerful that connection is, and all he did was tweet. He's waiting in an airport. He sent a little thank you tweet, and it blew someone's mind. That's very powerful.
Right. No, in a way, that's like thinking about Apple and Amazon, you know, some of the great companies who have really great customer service, or Zappos, who I think of as being incredible, that they always surprise you. And this is the idea, this term of being delighted, I think is really powerful for people because, you know, online is a sort of, by definition, a sort of alienating environment, disconnected from human contact. So the more human you are, I think the more people respond because they think of you as being, because you've done something unusual and special, which is basically to respond to them in a really, you know, in an authentic way. And not just in terms of trying to sell them something, so I think that's really good. Now, have you advised people on how to do video as an author in terms of, you know, really specifically, like, let's say I was a writer and I said, you know, I love the idea of doing video, but I don't know what to do. What would you tell me?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's the technical side, which is clearly something I could advise people on. But then there's really the content side. And that becomes a lot of issues as a writer would have around blogging, that type of thing, about if they're a nonfiction author, it's usually a relatively clear path about what you would talk about. And then we could talk about how to structure it, how to build your audience, how to put it out there, the ideas around that. Fiction's always a little more tricky because you're either deciding to share your life as a writer or just share who you are, which, again, is uncomfortable for people, or you're really understanding, again, those deeper themes and figuring out, well, this is what I'm going to talk about. This is what the content's going to be about. I think that's the biggest trick, is really figuring out at what level I'm going to communicate with people. But I would say that for a lot of people, you can only plan so far in the beginning. Sometimes you have to go out there and just, you know, everyone's first blog post is the same, and I think everyone's first video is the same, too. It's like, I'm going to try this vlogging thing. I don't know what I'm doing. It's probably going to fail. I'm probably going to sound so weird. Sorry ahead of time. Thanks. Because you don't know. And then a year later, you figured out what works for you. You figure out your voice, the topic, the audience. Just as I'm sure your first interview, you know, you're clearly a very wonderful interview. You've got a great tone, great questions. Everything segues perfectly. I'm sure your first interview is not that great.
I am sure you're right about that. In fact, I want to apologize publicly to the first people that I interviewed.
And I mean, this was something that I think Ira Glass from NPR, or from This American Life, I think, had talked about, he was very open in the series of videos I've seen on YouTube where he talks about how horrible he was at the beginning. He's sort of this master storyteller now. And even to this day, he'll say something like, you know, we'll shoot 40 hours of video and 30 hours goes in the trash, or 40 hours of audio. But even at that level that he's at, they're still always screwing up, that they had a story they thought was great. So great that they signed it. So great they went out and interviewed people. So great that they edited it. You know, weeks and weeks, you know, thousands of dollars of people's time going into this. And then they were wrong. It was fine, but it wasn't great. And they threw it out. They never aired it. And he talks about how arduous that is, but how important that is in the process. So one thing I like about that is that always that idea that it's never easy. It's always a challenge, and that as you do it more, you get more astute at realizing where is that line between good and great.
No, I think you're very astute in that, and what you're suggesting also inherently is, you don't learn how to ride a bicycle until you get on a bike and ride. And, I could tell you everything possible about balance and just do this and, here's how it works and, basically you just got to get on the bike and figure it out. And I think that's probably true of video blogging or video, whatever you would call it. And I think it may apply even as a good first principle to what you're teaching people, and that is you have to basically jump in and do it and pay attention to what you're doing as you're doing it so you can learn from what works and learn from what doesn't work and continually be involved. I think those are good lessons. I hope I'm paraphrasing you correctly.
Yes, you are very well. Thank you.
Now, this is great. I know we could talk on for a long time, but I think this probably is the limit of my podcasting ability. So I really want to thank you for coming and talking to me on this Publishing Talks show. I've been talking to Dan Blank, who runs WeGrow Media at wegrowmedia.com. I think, as you can tell, he's a brilliant marketer and a brilliant teacher of writers and publishers, so I recommend visiting his site. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much.